podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
If he gets sacked tomorrow, he's not. Like,
we're live now, so.
If he gets sacked tomorrow, could be anybody.
Could be anyone. Could be anyone in Rugby League.
Who's getting sacked?
We're all getting sacked in the morning.
Is it working?
Jason Demetriou.
Anybody but Mr. James Childer now has more jobs than anybody in Rugby League.
Apparently we're working, so that's a positive. We need to start a sweepstake on what time the pod will begin, says Phil. Now.
It's only 6 minutes past. Yeah. I tuned into the Catalan game,
yeah,
and I'd only missed a minute and a half, and I think it was about 8 minutes past.
It's only the kick-off time of an average Super League game. Yeah.
I didn't realise what time it was when we were downstairs. I'm like, oh, I better come up and set everything up, aren't I?
The fireworks. Can you see us for the
club? I know, we've got flag there, we've got bagpuss on the table, the scoreboard.
Have you ever had a game that you couldn't start because the fireworks haven't cleared?
I don't know, I can't remember. I probably wish that they couldn't see me.
That looked like all quiet on the Western Front. Like it was bad. It was a war zone.
Carson says, "Good evening, gents and John." It's not very nice, is it?
That's all right. He's a Queenslander. He's,
well, I wondered why there was a security guard on the door, but then I realised when I walked in and saw John.
Welcome. There's a queue of people outside waiting.
They're all wearing blue and white. Yeah.
Welcome to 40-20.
There could be any number of clubs, to be honest.
John Davidson is here. The Scourge of Featherstone.
And Castleford and Lee and
Toronto. Have they banned you yet? Because you were banned from Lee. Obviously, you're now back in Lee now.
No, I haven't. As far as I know, I haven't been banned.
Because I've said this before, if I'd actually had any power when I was at Wakefield, I'd have been banning people left, right and centre. Which is probably why they got rid of me in the end. And I was not very good at the job. But apart from that, that's a bit disappointing, isn't it?
So John could be less popular than me, and that's saying something.
I was thinking about that, and then I was looking at social media the weekend and the amount of referee abuse, not only during games but after games. I don't think I'm even close. seriously, the amount of unhinged people there are out there who blame referees for everything, Gaza, war in Ukraine,
and coaches.
Well, coaches generally don't help that kind of.
No, but they get blamed. Like, there's no.
Oh, I thought you meant coaches blaming referees.
There's no context around coaches. It's like you win, they're brilliant. You lose, they have to be sacked in the morning.
Well, the amount of criticism and calling for Rowan Smith's head I've seen in the last few days is, I mean, the record's 4-3. I mean, I know it's not 7-0, but are they that bad?
Where's the league table?
Let's not start.
I mean, you've been watching Leeds since 1702, so you can tell.
1895.
I've not bought a shirt in either. John was a big fan of the Northern Eagles shirt.
No, I'm not. Northern Eagles. The best thing is out of that we killed. Not now. I shouldn't say that. North City is still alive, just in the division below.
Saints never blame Liam Moore, says Andy. So I was getting into who we're blaming for everything. This is. Liam Moore listens to the podcast, Andy. Don't upset him. He might
stop
listening.
Actually, it was quite interesting. Now, I was watching the game while eating dinner, having a drink, supposed to be looking after my son, but that's a different story. Apparently, someone messaged me, who works in the sport, about Steve McNamara approaching the referee at halftime, which the commentary mentioned. And apparently this happens regularly in France. Is anyone aware of this?
How did they know?
Well, it was on TV. I missed it.
You could see it
because they said in commentary something about, oh, Steve McNamara's saying, it looks like he's welcoming his players off the pitch or something. I thought, well, I know exactly what he's about to do. And then, sure enough, he's walking next to Liam Moore. As a referee, it's very difficult because, my standard of response would be, we'll speak to you after the game. Which can come across quite rude, but they're not really supposed to speak to you at that time. But whether there should have been a match commissioner in that area, I'm not sure.
Because the person who messaged me was implying that happens regularly in Perpignan. Has that happened to you? Well, in the past, obviously.
I wouldn't limit it to one particular ground, to be honest. Yeah.
Bernard's been coming down the stairs.
Yeah, with a make clover. Yeah.
Usually I'm running off, to be honest.
You're dodging balls.
Well, that was the last ever Super League game I refereed. It was at Catalan against Leeds, and I was having to avoid the missiles being thrown. So I wouldn't limit it to Perpignan. It can happen on any number of games where a coach tries to get a message to you. It puts you in an invidious position because if you sort of try and dismiss them rightly, then you're being dismissive. And then if you entertain a conversation, then it's either seen on TV or seen by the opposition coach, and then inevitably you then get accused of making decisions in the second half as a result of that, which is nonsense. So you're in a no-win situation, really. So, yeah, I don't know how you try and avoid it other than you wait on the pitch, let them go into the tunnel. But then you're vulnerable
while because the ball
has been
thrown at you. It's not you just can't win.
It's not a great look, though, is it? No. Like, I'm not saying anything untoward happened, but it isn't a great look for the integrity of the...
So when Dave Woods or Mark Wilson or whoever on Sky says, well, let's find out what the coach have said at half-time, here's Jenner. Jenner also has to speak now to the referee to save the defense. And Liam Moore said that Steve McNamara walked past him or whatever.
Result of the weekend.
It's been a big weekend. York minus 44, that was the result of the weekend.
Swinton winning at Toulouse.
Swinton?
That's a huge result, isn't it?
Yeah. In homage to Mr. Kellner,
yeah,
who I know doesn't watch the programme.
And Alan Kilshaw doesn't know who he is.
Yeah. what a great result. Because it won't get the credit it deserves. We've seen some great rugby over this weekend, and we'll no doubt focus a lot on Super League. But what a fantastic result for Swinton in Toulouse. You wouldn't have got... You know,
was it something first time in the last couple of years, other than the playoff game, obviously?
You would not have got odds on that.
Yeah. Well, there was a lot of debate. We'll probably talk about the salary cap spend in Super League that Sky put out on, was it Thursday or Friday?
There's a whole agenda, John. We don't have to do anything. You just
rattle
off
the list.
You don't realise we don't know what we're talking about. We don't plan it.
I used to bring in a list and then I put it away.
And then you realise.
Well, I now come on the podcast to find out what's happened.
Well, I put one on Twitter that obviously get ignored, so that's all right. But yeah, if you did Toulouse v Swinton, it's probably close to £1 million difference in that.
Mm.
If not, you know, £800,000. I mean, that'd be crazy. Yeah, amazing result.
I just thought I'd mention it so we don't forget.
No,
that was the
credit to Swinton.
There will be the bit where I go and Barrow beat York. That bit coming up later. Steve Maskell said he should be banned, but I don't know what he's talking about. What should be banned?
Everything.
What, John Davidson, probably?
Yeah.
Well, I pay him money, so... Yeah.
What did you have on your list that we need to talk about? Just before I forget. When I get to the end,
it's been a quiet...
What news is going on?
It's been a quiet weekend. I mean, there's some things that we talked about before we started recording, which we could talk about. It was great to see Phil's Broncos get beat. No, that game was...
That Manly win one game in all of us.
Well, that we can talk about that. Yeah.
No, we can't.
But no, the
the
Broncos Melbourne game, you'll agree, Phil, that was absolutely insane.
Sensational.
And I think the St Helens Catlands game, although it was mainly whole of Sea fans were saying it was crap, but which
kind of they're experts on that. Though.
Yeah, but I thought the intensity of that game. I know there was mistakes,
there were
but
a lot
because
of mistakes,
it was so physical and intense, that was a fantastic game. And you know, it was tight. There wasn't a lot of tries, but there was some great games this weekend.
If we're going to start there, the fact that the spine of the Dragons team were French players.
Mm.
That's a real landmark, I think, for the Dragons. And yeah, I understand that they've looked for overseas players of quality in key positions for virtually every year that they've had a team in Super League. But to play a side that is acknowledged to be one of the two best in the league with five French players. I mean, obviously, that was after 10 minutes. Abdul did start. And
got injured.
Cesar Rouge came on. But to play to that level with a spine of French players, that is moving the game forward. That's a benefit above and beyond the Dragons having a great performance. And they all... I mean, I know Ulrich da Costa rightly got the man of the match. I haven't checked how many tackles he made, but I didn't see many that he
was
involved.
He's having a great season, yeah.
Fantastic.
I know we talked about Steve Miller earlier, but he has done a fantastic job changing the whole culture of that club, the professionalism.
Yeah.
And he does, I think he was getting criticised for some reason end of last year about the amount of French players, but he has actually given a lot of opportunities to a lot of those, and they're getting better, I think.
I also think that we'll talk about Hull, and one of the people that we'll need to talk about is Jack Charles, who is clearly an extremely talented young player on attack, but he's going to get ruthlessly exposed on defence, which he was by Huddersfield. And McNamara has very carefully and judiciously introduced players like Arthur Morgan and Cesar Rouge. And we sit here and go, why don't they play them more? And actually, because what you want is them to play at a level whereby they could perform like they did on Saturday night and bring home a result. You know, we know that Ben Garcia is good. Ben Garcia had a year at Penrith, didn't he? So, you know, you ain't a mug if you're going to be playing in the NRL. So, yeah, I just thought that, irrespective of the game, which I'm sure we'll talk about, the fact that they had those players in the key positions was pretty amazing.
Ockenball might argue with the mug bit, but anyway, we'll segue.
But people were talking at the end of last season about Catalan being potentially in a rebuild this year. Yeah.
I think I was. Yeah. I mean, marquee player, Sam Tonkins retires, Mitchell Pearce goes, yeah. Tyrone May, the whole spine basically goes, and Takeahu was going and then stayed. Like, I think how much money they'd spent on Tonkins, he was the key there. But they've been a remarkable...
We noticed the pickup of Abdul is a strange one because he's on loan as well, which is like...
Except on loan as in, please, will you take him off our hands on
that?
Yeah. We were talking about the best incomer at clubs, because there's been a poll. And obviously, we mentioned three players that weren't even on the list.
When Phil says we, he mentioned three players. I nodded, yeah, I've heard of those.
But I do think that one of the ones who isn't on the list, and even we didn't mention, I think Tarek Sims has been a fantastic addition for the Dragons. Yeah. And
George Williams' ribs.
Well, we talk about tackling technique, don't we? And you know whether the game's being refereed a little bit differently now, we're 6 or 7 weeks into it. But he has been sensational on defence, and he was again on Saturday night.
Are they going to be then the champions of Super League Europe at the end of the season?
It's too early to say.
No. When do we look at the league table now then? Because it's in the paper and everything.
I think what was said, a lot of people said that Saints and Wigan were the teams to beat, and it'll be, you know, between the two of them. I think you can now put Catalan in there as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's it. And I think it's a little bit like Warrington and Leeds. And there's been a lot of talk about Warrington and Sam Burgess, and they are doing very well. But they've been beaten by Catalans twice, and they haven't played St Helens or Wigan. If they go out and beat St Helens and Wigan, then you can sort of say, okay, you know, they can maybe do it. But there's a big difference between the top half and the bottom half, and we've seen that with the...
There's three divisions.
Yeah, well, I did mention that a week ago, and I think Brian Carney referenced it, but I got a lot of abuse on Twitter, so...
Brian Noble might have written about that in his column in the next one.
Was he reading too? Is he?
Which I'm obliged to say he's out on.
We can see the...
But, yeah, I think there you can watch... Well, we can watch every game now, can't we? And you can see the difference in intensity and skill and talent. I was at Cass on Friday night, and that was it was an entertaining game, but defence was optional for a lot of it. I mean, Danny Richardson kicked the ball out twice, and Cass still managed to win, which, you know, in a tight, high-intensity game, that would prove quite costly.
So Cass Salford wasn't quite the intensity of...
It was exciting.
This is the great thing, is it?
Different types of games, isn't there? Yeah, you know, a 6-0 game can be exciting. I think the grand final last year was, what was that?
10-2.
10-2, yeah. I mean, that was a great game, but it doesn't have to be 44-40, which can also be a great game. I think that's the
grand final,
though,
I thought was only, I wouldn't put it in the category of great, but because it was a grand final and because of what was at stake, that made it, in a way.
It was a regular season game. If you looked at the stats,
completion,
few missed tackles, very few errors.
It was physical.
It just wasn't particularly creative on attack.
But then World Cup finals in football and, you know, they tend
State of Origin games are often
teams
like
have
that,
got
yeah.
to that level because they're so good they cancel each other out. I mean, the Wigan Saints one that was behind closed doors in Hull with Wellesley's try, everybody remembers how it ended. But that was a dour game for
it was
79 minutes.
It was cold. I was sitting next to you. Freezing. Yeah. But that was an amazing...
Well, don't blame me. I
didn't. You'd turn the weather on.
You were about 2 metres apart.
Yeah, but it was intense, though.
Yes.
In its dourness, if that makes any sense, which probably doesn't. Yeah.
It just comes back to having teams that are competitive. So in a game that's competitive, which is what it was at Castleford Salford, you weren't quite sure who was going to win. Because when Salford sort of hit back, they scored just before half time, didn't they? And they scored, I think, again at early.
Twice
at the start of the second half, didn't they? And you thought.
And then they tried disallowed after that.
Oh,
yeah.
Hang on a minute. Castle did almost a little bit like Leeds, I think, they'd played the week before. They sort of played so well in that first half, but then you kind of thought, oh, I wonder if they're going to get sort of beaten now in the second half. And actually, fair play to Castleford to come back, as it were.
I had two. On the whistle reports written that Salford had won. So I had to rewrite those quicker. But Innes Senior, I mean, he was kind of like Jonah Lomu at times.
But
it was just two 60-metre tries. He was
pushing
people off.
How good was Sam Wood inside him? Because normally a winger needs to be set free. Yes, he's got to have great finishing skills and speed and evasion, but the space to do that is normally provided by the man inside him, and I don't think Sam Wood gets enough praise.
On that same level, Tim Lafoy was great. You know, I haven't looked at the stats, but he probably beat 10 or 11 defenders, and Nene McDonald...
18 tackle busts.
Yeah, something... Yeah. He was doing it well, and Nene McDonald, who obviously... didn't have a great season last year or a great, but he's been great.
He had a great season.
I think he's playing a lot better at Salford than he had at Leeds. He's scoring more tries. He's a much better.
The reverse Joel Moon.
Yes.
Also from Queensland via MG, so yeah.
Wanted to be nearer home, so moved to Salford.
I think it was positive for Castleford because I think they have been showing signs of progression. Yeah. And so for the fans, it was must have been a relief for them really that they could get a win on the board.
In saying that. They've got Wigan this weekend.
Followed by Wigan.
Paul McShane was injured. Joe Westerman was injured. Lane Watts was injured. And Josh Shearer was injured.
They're not going to win the Cup, though.
No, but being beaten by 60 by Wigan isn't going to be a great...
they'll be there anyway, because it's the Cups you have to pay, so there'll be about four
people. And it's not on TV.
The
other, I think, interesting thing about that Castleford game is how do we rate Salford? Because, again... they're the great enigma, aren't they? They can lose by 40 at Hull County in the Cup, then come back and win. Then they go to Castleford, who haven't won a game, don't perform as well as that. I mean, are they going down the same road as Lee in that we know that their squad is amongst the smallest in the league? So whenever they have injuries, they can't really rotate their players.
They haven't got many injuries, that's the thing, though.
But also, everybody's got to play long minutes because there's nobody really to bring in. They can't rotate
I was on BBC Radio Manchester before the game, and I'm probably the kiss of death because I was talking them up. I thought they'd been, obviously beat St Helens, probably should have beaten Wigan. Mm-hmm. And I thought after they had the off season of hell with what happened with their wingers and going to special measures, but they've been great. But they seem to rise for the better teams and maybe the lesser, shall we say, ranked teams.
But is it that they can't make changes because the squad isn't big enough?
Yeah, I think that's perhaps
which is part of Lee's problem at the moment, that once you start getting injuries and your squad isn't big enough, you're more exposed than you are if you've managed to blood a few players.
I think Lee's might be a bit deeper an issue, as Twitter may have shown during that game. I think, the fish rots from the head.
I was just about to say those exact same words, John.
I think you set certain standards in your club, in your organisation, and that can have an impact across. I think maybe last season was an outlier, not perhaps.
Well, other than
the
fact that they didn't have any injuries to key players.
Well, they've had how many suspensions have they had as well?
Well, we'll come back to talk about that with Hull because I think that's one of their major issues.
I don't think Matt Moylan's been particularly good either. May take him a while to settle in.
I think we expect too much of overseas players too quickly, generally.
It depends on the overseas players, ones who are compared with Trent Barrett and who aren't.
I mean, the one I would always cite in that discussion is Leslie Vinicola, who came here, virtually hadn't played for a year because I think he'd had a knee reconstruction in his last year with Canberra. The first year he was at Oddsall, even talking to Bradford fans, they were saying, why have we signed this guy? He's on all the posters, he's going to be, the volcano, and there's no sign of him erupting anytime soon.
He's dormant.
And yet, if you look at him retrospectively in how he's thought of in the history of Bull Mania, he's one of the great signings they ever made. So I don't think it's fair to judge any overseas player in the first 6 weeks of competition because not only are they adjusting to a different style of play over here, but it's the whole transition across the other side of the world.
Well, it's the cultural side, it's the weather, it's the condition. And as Mitchell Pearce, I don't know if anyone saw that over the weekend, as he, James would probably like this, what he said on Matty Johns' podcast about the ref's borderline cheat when you're playing against St Helens and Wigan. And he was saying about the differences and the lack of depth across the competition. At St Helens and Wigan, you've got good players around you as a half. Basically, their discussion point was young halves and how often they struggle in the NRL. Then they go to Super League and they're world beaters, and they use Jackson Hastings, Brody Croft as an example. And he was sort of pointing out the difference. He had an interesting point of view on the referees, but I'm not saying I agree with it at all.
His owner, doesn't it? And the chip on the shoulder that he sometimes has.
But no, I think
especially English referees.
I think that is the thing, though. Like particularly for a halfback, if you've got a big forward pack behind you, it depends what environment you're in, the players around you. There's so many factors.
Yeah, I've don't think you can judge Moylan yet. He clearly is a big signing for Lee, and he is adjusting. You can see he is adjusting. But when he hasn't got Edwin Apapé playing alongside him,
that's such a huge loss. Apapé, yeah.
You know, Tom Amone looking after him.
Mm.
It's tough. I don't think you can judge any overseas player that early.
When are we
even Jaden Ockenbull?
Is he the new?
You mentioned him.
Is he the new Trent Barrett? Look, I like Tony Smith. I think he's a great bloke, but I think the Trent Barrett. I mean, are we comparing Jordan Lee to Andrew Johns now? Like, what's you can't compare. I don't. He's trying to defend his player. I understand that. You know, he's not going to openly slag him off to the press, but he wasn't a very good player for the Bulldogs, who were the worst team in the NRL. I don't imagine he had a lot of suitors, and he's not particularly excelled
yet.
Yeah, and I think there are things, as you said, about adjusting, and then there's things like
I'm playing
with an attitude and putting your body on the line of defence, and that doesn't
seem
to be
there. Playing with a team that's really struggling as well.
Yes, that's definitely a factor. Yeah.
So are they going to be all right when they get their players back? Maybe should take
not necessarily. All right.
What they need to do is get some people in on loan, players and media stuff. I know there's some clubs with about 7 or 8 media people. So if they get some in on loan from other club, they can do more work. I don't think some club owners realise that you can't rely on a small group of people to do the work of a lot of people. But
I think it's hard if you get your players back and you're not quite stranded. But if you're not in as strong a position as you hoped you might have been, and certainly where you were last year, then psychologically, that's different. And I think that, you know, for Salford, for me, that's the explanation for Salford, I think, on Friday, is that they may be underrated Castleford.
Mm.
And it's hard sometimes when you're in a game to then, you know, row back.
We've got these three teams then, all on 4 wins and 3 defeats. Huddersfield, who a couple of weeks ago, it's like, Ian Watson is rubbish. And now Huddersfield are back, although, you know, they've only been Hull who are crap. Salford and Leeds in crisis, people saying, get the t-shirts back out. Made Warrington, you know, look like world beaters. Oh no, Warrington are world beaters, but Leeds, you know, not very good. I think we're supposed to praise Warrington more. We at Warrington say, Sandy, you're happy to hear you pundits constantly write wire off. But if we say it's their year, then you'll be. You
know, I don't really think anyone has anyone written.
No,
Warrington
I
haven't won a comp in 60-odd years. Like,
I don't think you can judge them yet. And I think Sam Burgess, more than anybody else, knows that you can't judge them yet. Because the two real tests that they've had, they haven't quite
they've
passed.
Failed,
them.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's see how they go at St Helens in the Cup. That's almost a free
that's
hit.
That's a huge game,
it's
yeah.
It's a free hit, isn't it? You know, Saints coming back off a loss.
They managed to win that game. Yeah, it tells us a lot.
So, but I also thought that what you saw from Warrington on Friday night, and we will come back to Leeds, and that was a very regressive performance from Leeds, is what Sam is trying to achieve. And that is he's investing more in the young players which have consistently been put to one side in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And they're starting to deliver. There is a cohesiveness about what they're trying to do. And when George Williams is... he said something really interesting about George Williams, because George Williams is the captain of England, so you'd think he know what leadership is all about and captaincy. And he said in the press conference afterwards, he's just starting to get it. So obviously what Sam wants him to get is something that hasn't been asked of him before, which is really interesting. So that, you know, that change doesn't happen overnight. I think the whole Ben Curry experiment was shown superbly to be working, that for 2 years he's been playing almost as an auxiliary centre, barely touching the ball and a little bit not fulfilling the potential that he had, even allowing for the fact that he had 2 knee reconstructions. Stick him in the middle as a loose playmaking loose forward, he was on fire. He was by far the best player on the pitch. So again, I think that's the kind of change that sounds right. I just don't think we're in a position to judge them at the moment. He's clearly got now Matt Duffy playing more of a team role rather than, oh, let's give him the ball and hope that he'll get us out of trouble. They look a better team this year, but it's far too early to say we do or don't praise them.
We're supposed to make rash statements about teams and then completely go against what we've said the next week and say, no, actually, they're rubbish.
Are you Gary Schofield?
No. what's going on? I think Tony Smith got the comparison wrong, says Mark. Pat Richards was the player Wigan fans wanted to come after, wanted to get rid of after a month, then ended up being loved by all. Barrett hit the ground running. So there you go.
I wasn't here when Trent Barrett came over, whether he hit the ground running or not, but I'm fairly sure he'd played a lot of State of Origin and for Australia at that point, which I don't think, I could be wrong, Jaden Ockenball's been...
Played for America.
America, right, okay.
Matt Gidley was another one, because when Jamie Lyon left...
He was a, yeah.
Jamie Lyon's, you know, status is like as high as it can be. Matt Gidley comes in to replace him, and clearly A, he's not Jamie Lyon, plays a completely different style.
He was also about 35, wasn't he?
And B... needed time to adjust, but when he did, people are now saying, oh, you know, Matt Gidley, fantastic.
Well, I'm old enough to remember Matt Gidley and his pomp, and for Newcastle, New South Wales and Australia, his flick pass to Tamana Tahu and
but,
whatever.
But when he first arrived here, he needed time.
And also, I think it depends on what time, what age players come, you know.
Does some of the older ones... position as well, I don't know.
It does,
for a forward than it is for a back, I don't know. We've seen plenty of forwards that have come from the NRL and not made any.
I think attitude. I mean, we can use Willie Mason as an example. You know, okay, he's probably on a list of probably the worst signings in Super League history. But you know, he achieved a lot in the game. I don't think you would say he was a bad player, but he obviously wasn't a great Robin.
Well, the whole KR fans, you tell us how good he was.
Catalan have had a few Australian forwards. Dave Taylor.
Yeah. Dave Taylor. Well, Dave Taylor's a great. Yeah, the Coltrane. Fell out of bed and missed the State of Origin. Well, that was the story that was told. I think he was doing something else in bed. But anyway.
You mentioned Scott. He once on Radio Yorkshire had a real go at Dave Taylor in commentary. It was hilarious. I think it was against Wakefield. I'll have to find that clip.
I can't remember who actually said it. I think it was on Triple M. But I think the analysis of Dave Taylor was really interesting because of his size. He was always a giant amongst boys when he came through. So he never really had to work that hard to dominate games. And then I think... when he kind of got found a little bit older, it was like, well, I didn't really have the work ethic to maintain. I mean, I'm not saying Latrell Mitchell is the same, but there is a little bit of an element in that. You know, I think as a younger player, he was just killing it without trying that hard. And now it's the pressure's on and whether he can back that up. But
well, that's what changed Catalan's thinking around recruitment. He moved away from single blokes and tried to recruit.
Put him on the beach in his and then wondering why they didn't turn up.
I think the trips down to...
kids bring them over. We did that, that's fine.
The trips down to Barcelona for drinking and partying maybe aren't as prevalent now. I don't know.
When Old Trafford is knocked down and the government build them a new stadium because the government are nice like that, should we move the grand final to the south of France just for a year or something? Or to Barcelona?
I don't mind doing anything as long as we've got sufficient notice.
Like the Samoa series.
Don't do it the week before.
Do you like the Samoa series? Is that on?
And it's not likely to be a French air traffic control strike or something.
Easter, they do love a strike.
Which teams will be in Bagpuss's top six? I'll ask him. Bagpuss? He's a bit quiet. What's going on with Toby King at Wire? Birdie seems a little unhappy with his unavailability.
Again, it was fascinating listening to him talking about that because he was asked about whether Toby King would be fit for this week and what the injury was, and he basically said, I've spent 6 months, I still can't work the guy out, it's Toby's world and we live in it. Again, that's the attitude that I think he's trying to change. I'm not saying Toby King has a bad attitude, but I think you don't get cohesion and teamwork if you can't work out. You know, Toby will tell us whether he's fit or not. You go, isn't that the wrong way around?
I think that also goes that you have to manage different personalities differently, you can't have a one size fits all approach.
But he's a grand final winner from last year, so you'd want him included if he's fit.
Very Chris Chester, David Fafita vibe in that one. Why not mention?
I knew you were going to mention him then.
Things to capture in press conferences, because usually in press conferences, nothing happens. Although I'm intrigued. Now, I've gone off what I was going to say, but I'll come back to your point in a minute, Stefan. Now, many clubs are live broadcasting press conferences. Do you feel like it's not going to bother now?
Are they?
Yeah.
Who's doing that?
Leeds have. I think Lee might have done their pre-match the other week.
Right.
Probably just so Degsy can watch it while he's on hold. Why all the negativity, Stefan?
Sorry, before the Stefan, you mentioned press conferences, and I thought we should reference your great tweet yesterday about the greatest... I mean, it's not a rugby league press conference, but the greatest sporting, rest in peace. Yeah. He was a great player.
None of the words we can use, but
Who's Simon Bird?
Yeah.
You're a... Yeah.
And again, we go back to, if I'd have been in charge of places, that's what I'd have
apparently done. Mr. Millwood did that at St. Helens one time. Yeah, were you there, Phil? No.
Yeah, I
were you aware
once was in the eye of his ire for daring to ask
you.
Yes, a question about
an
injured player, which palpably turned out to be an answer that was untrue.
I think they should be. I think Super League should be live streaming all the press conferences. I don't understand. I mean, journalists aren't allowed to live stream them.
No.
The media, there's interesting things said, and often you'll see what's said on Sky. I mean, after is very different to what's said after the game. You know, I think Tony Smith did 19 minutes after the derby at Easter. I was there, and he said some very interesting things, and probably got a little more annoyed as it went on with the line of questioning. But yeah, I think they're good. Much like the salary cap figures that Sky put out, I think it's a good debate. It's a good topic, and it generates discussion.
Well, when David Ferner was asked about some people online saying Leeds were in crisis, while the people who
said it was all Mark Wilson, wasn't it? It was all Mark Wilson.
Well, the people who said Leeds were in crisis were in the same room.
Did he have a t-shirt on?
I think he had a sign saying Fernsey out. That's what you did, didn't it?
Oh dear. Anyway, Stefan, before I get in trouble, says, why not mention Lee selling out the stadium on Thursday rather than all the negativity? Great support from Wigan.
We're talking about the result. We haven't spoken about selling out the stadium yet. That one thing that Rodri Jones talked about on a call from Perpignan before the Saints game with Catalan, which he was at, was the fact that crowds are up, I think he said 4%. Viewing figures are up between 15% and 20%.
How does he know that the crowds are up when two clubs this week didn't give their attendance figures?
Apparently the RFL know what they are.
Oh, right.
And he also said that there'd been a number of sellouts so far this season, of which clearly he referenced Lee being the next one of them. So yeah, absolutely. You have to pay credit to the Wigan fans. There seems to be quite a lot of them there as well. But yeah, I don't think we've ever criticised what Lee are doing in that aspect. We're talking about maybe their results this year, but also...
Well, that's not necessarily criticism, it's just observation, isn't it? It's just if you've got injured players and you've got a relatively small...
Cheerlead
sport,
more, James. Cheerlead more.
It's not criticism, it's observation.
But Phil, your point there, that kind of dispels this 1954 notion that we can't have games on TV because it will hurt the attendances.
Oh, no, we can't. In the championship, it will hurt...
Can I say that's bullshit? Sorry. Language.
But then I still read articles last week, not articles, people on the internet saying, well, if, why aren't Channel 4 buying the rights to the Championship? Well, there's an obvious reason why they're not. But why aren't the clubs doing anything themselves? Keep saying this every week. No reason why they're not. So why aren't they? Especially if they're going to turn this deal down. So do something.
I'm sure Swinton fans would have loved to watch the victory in Toulouse. Mind you, Toulouse's home games are going to be televised by a regional television station.
I'm sure people will find a way of watching them then, because they can find a way of watching everything these days. There's something about the... with the Championship clubs and the new TV deal and Premier, people think, well, you've got to be on TV. No one's going to stumble across it. It's not on BBC One. It's not as if you're going to stumble across some new drama or something. So there you go, that's a modern negativity.
Having said that, just on the TV, that's one of the drawbacks with the BBC deal, is that are you likely to stumble across it on BBC 3? Or are you likely to stumble across it on iPlayer?
Well, probably not on iPlayer, because don't put the bloody links on the BBC website.
Whereas when it was on Channel 4 and you're flicking through channels, then you're likely to see it. So I know people consume TV differently these days. It's very rare I watch live TV. You're watching on
exactly,
I get that argument. So I don't know. It's the way sports go in generally, isn't it? You have to seek out the sport that you want to watch, as opposed to
definitely
the days of 20 years ago when we had the grandstand and it was a magazine show.
I think the other thing about that, that there were issues last year, particularly with Channel 4's coverage, with real devout rugby league followers not knowing when the next game was, and assuming that because Saturday at 12:30 was their slot. I can remember talking to Brian Noble, I think it was, and saying, oh, did you watch Salford and Wigan on Channel 4? And he went, I didn't know it was on. It's like, now here's a guy that gets up in the middle of the night to watch every NRL game he can. But he just had missed the fact that it wasn't that Saturday at 12, and it had been a month since the last game. And so, yeah, when, you know, if you want to consume stuff on the BBC, you are going to have to look for it. It's not going to be laid out in front of you.
I don't mean to be rude, but there's this invention called the internet. Really? And you can find things on it. You can search. Like, Google is a great invention. Yeah, like, just use it. I mean, most people have a computer in their phone, in their pocket, and you can find out when every game's on. You just tap a few buttons. And realistically, I think people could do that once a week, and they can find out what game is on. And if they want to watch it, they can make a decision. But I'm getting a lot of tweets. I didn't know BBC Three was even on anymore. I mean, yes.
Well, it wasn't on, but now it's back. Yeah.
But no, James is right. You obviously, if you're on the main channel of the first, you're going to get more passerbys. But I think also the Super League RL commercial, they need to push, they need to promote these games as in above line advertising more.
Well, it all comes back to money, doesn't it? It's all about revenue generation, commercial revenue generation. Yeah. So if you've got more eyes on the game, then you're going to presumably generate more income off the back of it. So if it's on a TV channel that's going to be one that's, you know, you're not going to get passing trade on, then you've got to drive the traffic to it, haven't you, you're saying.
Which they're not really doing. But also the BBC, they have their own minds on what they want to broadcast. It's not like, people seem to think, just get them to do that. TV networks have their own agendas.
But what was interesting this weekend was that Sky packaged up their big weekend.
Pushing rugby league a lot more this year, without a doubt.
Golf, and obviously they had quite a big football match yesterday, apparently, or whenever it was. But Catalan and St Helens.
Sheffield United.
Great draw.
Was part of that big package.
We're back, Rich.
Yeah, back in the Championship.
Oh, that's harsh, isn't
it? Yeah, you're right. I can't remember the last time I've seen that, to be honest.
But, so, you know.
They are pushing it more. A lot more, Sky. I think, without a doubt, I've seen
that. Also, because I think we're giving them a product that they can push. The fact that they looked at the league table and went, well, you know, the winner of this is going top, but, you know, you just come out of a Good Friday game where Saints and Wigan, big viewing numbers, a lot of people knew about that. A lot of them then watched Warrington and Catalan, different sort of game, but an entertaining game. And now these two are meeting in the south of France. You know, the winner's going top. There's going to be 10,000 people there. The atmosphere looked fantastic. So they pushed it because we gave them a product to push.
The issue that goes along with that, which is counterproductive, though, is that the national media coverage is shrinking. I mean, you can look at,
but again, that's down to the way people consume.
Partly, I think it's also partly down to the way the game is promoted and engaged with media outlets, which is almost non-existent. But there is less, and you were on the call, Phil, so you can say there was three journalists on the call with Roger Jones on.
Yeah, but the problem is, there were probably five, but it was on at the same time.
Three from the same publication.
People were going to Lee and Wigan. You know, you've also got, if you're going to have something, and I understand they had to wait for him to arrive in Perpignan before you could have it, you've got to have it at a time where most people can gain access.
I think it's a fairly bad reflection.
You can read about it in the next issue of Forth.
Phil, I watched the recording, it was riveting. It was riveting.
The readers haven't.
I
tweeted the best bits, Phil, it's all right.
Tangential part of the rugby league media. The Aussies missing the point, says Paul. You don't have a name anymore.
That's all right. I've been called Parasite and Worst recently, so that's okay. That's just a bummer.
It's about appealing to a wider audience, not singing to the choir. I think the problem is, and it's been...
I'm aware of
James
that,
James
yeah.
has just mentioned it, about how we consume TV. I can't think of anything I actually watch of general entertainment live, because you don't need to watch it. I don't watch The Apprentice live. I don't watch anything else on BBC.
I thought you said entertainment.
Well, I know. So if I'm recording something and watching it back, beyond Paradise, there you go. I'm watching it back. I'm fast-forwarding to the start of the programme. When it's finished, I'm gone. If they put a trail on saying, Super League's on tomorrow night, watch it. Catalan Saints are going to be great. I won't know. Same as the boat race or the golf or whatever. Yeah. I wouldn't know because I'd...
Things have become more niche.
The podcast, as soon as the adverts come on, I press, 30 seconds.
Don't do that on this podcast. Don't do that.
Yeah, I do the same. James Graham's podcast is the worst for that.
That there's 2.5 minutes of adverts at the start, right? Just skip those.
Yeah. I don't put a noise so people don't know when they're coming.
I think that is, James is right. Things have become more fragmented, more niche, so people go off in the niche. There's only a few events, whether that be, FIFA World Cup final.
BBC Three having that game to augment the fact that most people would have gone to Sky in the first place to see.
Not everyone has Sky though. That's a big thing.
I just thought that what was the combined attendance was something like 250,000, and it was split roughly between BBC Three and so you know it worked as far as the game's concerned. It worked. Half the people watched it on BBC Three, half watched it on Sky.
Saturday night, 8 o'clock. You're up against Casualty. You're up against Anton Deck or whatever. You
know, people with social lives.
I think it was a good slot. Actually.
The Spanish Cup final that was on. Bad times. Don't talk about it. And sorry, they did on penalties, but they're very much 10 men behind the ball kind of thing. Never mind. Andy saw it advertised, so at least Andy saw it advertised. So that's they must be doing something. But it's in the build up. If I go to the BBC website, am I going to see lots of articles about?
But again, to see it advertised, you have to watch live TV. You don't watch live TV, you're not going
to
see.
But there are other ways to advertise. There's Instagram.
They can advertise on this podcast. I keep hearing all these BBC Sounds adverts for people doing podcasts off the telly about things I don't care about. So, you know, could
do. You're for sale, aren't you, Rich?
Definitely. Adam Hills is doing a podcast about a murdered wrestler at the minute.
He's on Celebrity Bake Off next week.
We used to like Adam. Oh, does that mean I've got to write about that now? Yeah. I'm batting a fire on House of Games. Do we need to talk about anything else in Superman?
We probably should talk a bit more about Hull, because you've written a long piece about
we haven't spoken about either Hull.
And your favourite team, Leeds.
I'm willing
to talk about Leeds if you want.
No, Hull. I think Hull have probably been, of the first seven rounds, the glaring... I mean, no one's surprised that London haven't... Well, anyone with a half a brain is not surprised that London haven't won a game. But Hull, well, they have been getting worse. The results have been getting worse for several years, but they've probably been quite worse than... most would have anticipated.
I think the one positive for them was that I thought Franklin Pele played as well as I've seen him so far. He actually ran his way. No, but he did, didn't he? He did.
How many times has he been suspended? I think Jack Charles, you mentioned.
Yeah, but I mean,
he's got some talent.
He has, Ian Watson, you know, understandably, targeted him.
Oh, you just run all your big forwards at him, yeah.
Which is exactly what they did. Yeah. And I think the point Tony Smith was making, that his disappointment was that the whole players didn't rally round and protect him a bit more.
Doesn't surprise me, though. You've got...
That would be the issue, I think, for Hull. That's the bit that's missing, more than anything.
You've got Jamie Shaw calling for Tony Smith to get sacked. You've got Tex Hoy's dad on Instagram criticising. I mean, it's not a United club, is it? I mean, obviously the fans are very, very unhappy. Someone out there can tell us, but how many weeks in a row now is it that they've conceded 40 or 50 points? There you go.
3 weeks out of four, they've conceded over 50 points.
And the two weeks before that as well. Yeah, I mean, and Huddersfield aren't St Helens or Wigan or Catalans, you know.
Yeah, 22-56 this week, and then 34-10 in the derby, and 50 points to six away at Huddersfield. And then the week before, they lost at home 54-4 to Lee.
They only just beat London.
Yeah, so London were very unlucky to lose that game.
Look at the Catalan result away, 26-12. Yeah. You know, so I think that's what's concerning. They seem to be getting worse. And I appreciate they've got injuries and a huge amount of injuries.
Yes.
And then they've had suspensions. So.
Well, that's the bit I was going to say. You know, they are clearly, by the number of cars that they've got, the most indisciplined team in the competition. Does that come out of frustration with their performances, or as a sort of like a referee, do you look at them and go, we need to look at Hull because they're a club that clearly.
I don't know. I mean, I'd have to look at each individual card and work out what. I think, well, for foul play generally, aren't they? And a number of those came in the first game.
I was going to say I was about to say that, Phil. Yeah. You can't really blame that in the first game, 20 minutes in or whatever it was. You know,
Is that technique? Is it the play that you've signed and
ill discipline?
His record. You know, there's probably a whole number of factors in that. But clearly, it's an issue that they've got that they'll be looking at, won't they? And if players buy into what's going on, then I think that they respond to that. But it's hard to change your ways if you're
So that's the thing with Liggy Sal getting Simbin twice in the same game.
I think that clearly shows they're not buying into it, are they?
Are they capable of learning?
The other great thing about this game, sorry James, is you've got the immediate thing you can say, Jake Connor, Adam Swift. There you go. Both at Hull in recent years, scored the point, 7.
Well, I think the Jake Connor one's interesting because, and the piece that I wrote, which It's free online. Anyone can read it. And it references a book that you may have published by a very, well, it's an amazing player, wasn't he? Gareth Ellis. Yes. Don't need to speak in code. Anyone should go out and buy his book because I think it's a fascinating read. But he made some really interesting insights about Hull FC. He obviously spent a long time there. He was part of success there. He's no longer there, but makes some interesting insights about the culture, about the owner, about promises that were made. And I think this all ties into how the club is run, how the recruitment's been made. And I think you look at Tony Smith, he said this last year, he wanted to change the culture, he's tried to change the squad, but then you look at, they're obviously not spending the full salary cap. They've got a stadium.
You referenced that thing that Sky did about what clubs were spending.
I heard that weeks ago.
Is that at the start of the season in the local newspaper, Adam Pearson was saying, we've recruited really well and we're spending all the money that, you know, we think we
clubs
you,
would and, never, and never
get,
lie, would
get
they?
The figures and it's clearly not that. And the performances would indicate it isn't that. So again, you've got to take your fans with you with a degree of honesty
you've got to measure people's expectations.
Yes, yes.
Just because you don't spend to the cap doesn't necessarily mean, as we've seen in previous
Salford.
Years. Absolutely. So it doesn't necessarily mean that.
But don't promise what you can't deliver.
Yeah, I agree. That's probably where some of the frustration is coming from if you're a Hull FC.
Well, I think the other issue as well is the local juniors.
Mm.
When was the last great player that came from Hull?
Not even great, just good.
You know, Danny Houghton, you could make a case
for him. Well, I use two examples who came from Hull FC, who they let go. Jez Litton, England international. Jordan Abdul, England international. They let them go.
But even Hull KR are not, as successful as they are at the moment, they are not relying on local talent.
Well, they're helping themselves to Hull FC.
And the
core
of local talent that Hull have had are no longer young. They keep being referred to as young, and they're not. They've been there long enough to establish themselves as Super League players. They all look, size-wise, the same. But where, you know...
But even that...
Where's the next Mikey Lewis?
Even that
structure... It might be Jack Charles, but...
Yeah. Even that structure's not been settled, has it? Because they had their own academies, then they came together, then they've gone their separate ways again.
So Michael Shenton was there for 5 minutes, he's left,
so
there's been a lot of change there,
so there's no stability. And you know, if you're looking at a Wigan as a comparison, which you inevitably would do as the champions, that you've got a head coach there who's come through that pathway himself in terms of a coach, so you've got that continuity.
Well, you look
as is Paul Wellens as a player and an assistant coach.
But you look at June in December and what he did for Wigan this week at Lee, and you look how his progression into what is a winning team and a winning culture has made him already a standout. Harvey Hill, I think, is a fantastic young prospect. We haven't even seen Ethan Havard this year. Sam Walters hasn't made his debut yet. Admittedly, he didn't come through the Wigan system, but they've identified the fact that that's how they want to bring their young players in. Hull are having to throw some young players in who are getting woefully exposed, who I don't think... it's any fault of theirs or even Tony's, because I think he realised what it takes. You need to bring
definitely.
Them into a... So, you know, Logan Moy, everybody said, oh, it's great. And like, kid's 17, don't expect too much of him at the moment.
This is a project for Hull that's probably going to take them three years at least. And
the core of players that they're building their team around aren't good enough.
But it's not just that, Phil. It's not just the homegrown Jews. It's the overseas recruitment as well.
But I think overseas, you can only fish in the market that you can afford to fish in.
Yes and no, because you look at, and I'll use Salford as an example. They've got less money than Hull, but they have a fantastic track record. And overseas, you know, Jackson Hastings, Lusick.
Didn't stay.
Well, I disagree because... they got to a grand final, and then 2 years later, they were one win from a grand final with a different team.
And
Tim Laffey, another. I mean, he was on a building site. No one wanted him, and he's been fantastic. I mean, he basically killed England in the semi final of the World Cup. You know, he's been a great signing. Salford have a great track record of that. I think it just shows that they're not doing the research either on the players that they've been offered, or they're just making poor decisions.
Which
and
is
that
very on Tony Smith like.
I don't think Tony Smith... Well, some of those decisions have been made before he was there.
Mm.
I think you tie that back to when Motu Tony left, who was in charge of that in 2017, and since then they've gone one way and it's downhill.
I mean, on a salary cap perspective as well, you know, recruiting local juniors is going to be cheaper than
it
is.
But what if they're not being produced? The question that's not.
But how
being
can you
asked
not
is,
in a hotbed? A hotbed of rugby.
I don't think it's as much of a hotbed in terms of participation.
That's the issue, isn't it?
Yeah,
that is the issue. If the kids were there, they'd be in the systems, but they're not because they're not there.
Does that give Leeds an advantage for an example, or are we going to say it's where you've got?
Oh, it does. Yeah.
You've got just 100%. The small town of Wigan, but you've got other
100%.
You basically got the whole of Lancashire and even into Yorkshire. But, they're taking juniors
Wigan,
from
yeah, Morgan Smithies from Halifax. That's your network. That's your scouting. Yeah. So you go, well, there's this great kid who's lives 3 hours away, but we'll get him in at 15 and we'll turn him into. Yeah. And
so
they've done that with Morgan. And then they sell him to Canberra and make some money.
It wouldn't just be Hull, would it? It would include York, it would include West Yorkshire as well. I mean,
but I think the question that isn't really being addressed is what's the quality and number of kids playing in an area that we always refer to as a hotbed, which it clearly is. But
I think we've
where
seen
is
that.
The next?
We've seen those clubs.
Two or three great young players that we're already hearing about.
I think we've seen those clubs, those junior clubs, die off, haven't we? Those amateur
clubs.
Well,
certain age groups within them have, yes. And that's something that the game should be looking at. And that's not Hull's fault, necessarily.
I think
it might be a wider issue for the sport as a whole.
But I think the other issue, which they're also facing, is the stadium. You know, I think that what I was told, the tenancy agreement runs out, I think, in 27 or 28.
Yeah.
And they don't make a lot of money because they are tenants.
Which was negotiated by
Adam Pearson.
All right. Okay.
And my information is that I think Adam Pearson would like to sell the club and move on, but who's going to take it? Who's going to buy it? I mean, they're not a particularly profitable club. They have a large fan base, don't get me wrong, but if you're selling season tickets for next year now, you're not getting... not investable? How dare you say that?
Obviously, half their catchment area is fish and they don't play rugby league, but York have started moving towards Selby and going up towards Scarborough and whatever. I'm not saying they're going to pull anyone out there straight away, but obviously Gareth Ellis from Selby.
But this whole argument is around time.
Mm.
Time and resource, but mainly time. So when we have one result that doesn't go your way or a couple of results, we're already throwing the coach out. And
That's not the answer, is it, for me?
No,
that's not the answer for me.
But nobody has perspective.
Yeah.
Well, that's
you have to stay true to you. A, you've got to have a plan, and I'm not sure Hull do. That's part of their problem. And then you've got to stick to that plan because you're going to hit some bumpy days.
You've also got to have the right people in the right positions of power.
It comes back to the right people.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The right people in the right jobs. So, you know, your pathway is so important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, recruitment into your first team. Cass has started to do that.
I mean, 2 years ago, Cass revamped their whole junior development programme because although there were a lot of kids playing at places like Castleford Academy, they weren't necessarily breaking through into the first team, or they were being picked up in.
They were going to lose their license, weren't they? Yeah.
So they've revamped everything, and now that you look at the results, which is an indication of the academy, the reserves, and the college team that they've recently founded, and they're starting now on a track where that's going to prove fertile. But as Craig Lingard has said, that isn't going to happen this season. It may not happen next season.
I think what you were saying too about...
But I'm not sure Hull of...
Yeah. I'm not trying to change the subject, but I think what you were saying too about the reaction of sack the coach. I've had two people online say this. If St Helens lose this weekend, Paul Wellens could be under pressure. I mean, I'm sorry, what? And obviously there's the Rowan Smith thing. And I understand Leeds fans, they've been through a lot since 2017 and our pasture, but you're not just sacking coaches. There's not just 100 ready coaches.
I've sacked Tony Smith and Rowan Smith. I own Leeds.
And Paul Wellens.
And Paul Wellens.
Yeah, yeah.
Because my mate can't be happy about that. So who's out there? But I'm Dal Powell. You buy him out of his contract.
You have TV? I don't know. I think people... fans seem to have a divine right that their team has to win every game, and if they don't...
You're not
going to
get the kind of stability that is going to bring you longer-term success if you're always looking at one result on any weekend.
And Hull have had, five or six coaches in the last 4 years.
And the other thing from a player's perspective, having never been one, is that if you keep losing the coach, it keep reinforces the impression that, doesn't really matter because they'll just change the guy at the top.
Ooh. And I've still got a contract, I'll be right.
I don't have to be accountable.
If it's back on the players, then hang on a minute. You've got a bit of
responsibility.
Which
is why Hull need to stick with Tony Smith, in my opinion, and go through however rough this time is.
The decline was well before he got there.
And if he can see some ways of changing that, and there is going to be pain in doing that. He is about as good as you can get.
Mm. The flip side is, though, have the players, because the results, if you look at them, they're getting worse, have the players completely switched off from him now? I don't know that. I'm just asking a question.
I think that can happen at clubs, can it? I think the other thing is that we tend to judge from afar. So, you know, I hear Leeds fans saying, Ralph Smith's probably not a great coach. Well, like, when was the last time you observed a coaching session with him or spent some time with him, you know, between 2 and 5 in his office while he explained to you what his coaching for? The fact is that they are judged on an 80-minute performance. It's almost like, you know, you go into any other business and go, that employee, not pulling their weight, because I've observed it. You've got to work with them. You've got to know exactly what they bring to the business, what's being asked of them, what longer-term vision they have of their position within that organisation. We don't ask any of those questions because we live in a world now whereby, and it's sort of understandable, it's an 80-minute, were they good or were they bad? And if they were good last week, that counts for nothing, because if they've been bad this week, they need to be sacked.
So one of the criticisms that a journalist might get is that you don't ask the tough questions.
I get criticised for asking them. I need to be more positive and cheerleader.
Yeah, but even if you ask the tough questions of a player, of a coach, you're not going to get an honest answer.
Not all, you do sometimes, I think, but not always. No,
I think the players are going to say to you, I don't like the coach.
Yeah.
Or there's been a fallout in the camp.
No, but the longer that you spend with them, ideally not in that formal press conference environment in the immediate reaction to a result, the more you get to understand what they're about, what they stand for, whether you can then judge that the tools that they've been given to do the job allow them to do the job the way they would like to do them.
Mm.
All of those kind of things you have to factor in. And, you know, Brian McDermott was a divisive figure.
Yes, he always got stuck into you for some reason.
Loads of Leeds fans wanted out, even though he's winning.
But
all
I
of
have
the
to
trophies.
Say, the most enjoyable times I've had with a coach in terms of learning what they were about as a human being and their philosophy of coaching was talking to Brian away from the game. Was fortunate, I think, to spend quite a bit of time with him and with Tony when he first started at Leeds. And these are people that if you forget their public persona, because a lot of that is a mirror. It's what they want you to see or what they don't want you to see. If you get to know what their philosophies are a little bit closer outside of that 80 minutes that they're judged on, they're not quite the people that you think that they are. Mm. And they do deserve probably a lot more respect than they're given by some fans, because they don't tout themselves. They're dismissed.
If you could get Brian Ainsworth, of course, that'd be great. Fellas to know him, money or not. I think that, and it's interesting you mentioned Brian McDermott, because I think that with Leeds, for me, it does go back to what happened when he left, and they never really went through a full rebuild. They kind of threw money at the problem.
Yeah.
Dave Ferner came in, they threw money at Merrin and Lolahia and Hurrell. And two of those three were a bust, and Merrin, I think, actually played well, but went home early.
But wasn't staying. Yeah.
And then the Furness situation, Kevin Sinfield fell out with him, and they said, all right, we'll put our stock in Sinfield, and then he fell out with Gary Hetherington and left. So it's kind of, and Richard Agar was a stopgap. So they've kind of been in this weird in-between thing for years. So now is it a case of they've invested in the squad, they've got some good young players. Do they stick with this coach?
The spirit is good.
Yeah.
Compared to
Blake
last
Austin
year.
Disagrees.
He might have been one of the reasons the spirit wasn't as good as it is this year. But which again, under a salary cap with contracts, the first year or 2 years that a coach is at a club,
he's going to
inherit.
Yeah,
he's not going to recruit,
and
you have to look at the juniors coming through, because that is your future, and that's where I'm saying that my issue with Hull at the moment is there's a hole there.
Mm.
Like, you know, you keep trying to put a foundation in, but it's dropping through a hole. Mm. You look at Wigan, clearly, it's obvious on the field. You look at Saints, it's obvious with people like George Delaney that are now. But they're coming into winning environments. Mm. I think the thing at Leeds is they have got some good young kids. And what they did to become a great club, some of the ingredients are starting to be there again. So you possibly would be stupid to disrupt it at the top again, because you'd then rebuilding all the time. They had a poor result this week. They regressed to the team they were in 2023. People have already forgotten what Rowan Smith did in 2022 when he arrived.
Definitely.
So those, I can't coach. You go, well, like, how did you get them to a grand final when they'd absolutely no right to do
that? They were absolutely terrible that first third of the season.
So was that, sorry, was that just they...
People have sharp memories.
Was that they just do. They decided that, you know, at that point they were going to play to their potential? Or did a guy come in that managed to unlock some of that potential? And so, yeah, it was an incredibly poor performance from where they'd been earlier in the season. Mm. But if you keep changing, you're going to end up with the kind of inconsistency whereby you're always then asking for change.
They've also got a brand new spine that's played together, seven games, you know, yeah. Miller, Croft, Frawley, Akers.
And they want to play a certain way which is more conducive to firmer grounds and better weather.
Hull can now beat London. elsewhere...
Surprise,
the great thing about all the games being on is that you can just ignore games that you know.
One question on that.
All right.
Hull KR again, brilliant first half. Yeah. Blew a team away in the third, like they'd done in the derby. Didn't replicate it in the second. Are they going to have to learn to do that if they're going to really challenge at the top?
Oh, yeah, I think they are. I think it's subconsciously when you're up by 40 points, don't you?
Yeah,
you know, and you know, and you know, I think, you know,
but it's not the only week they've done it. They've been, you know, the first round one against Hull.
Yeah,
they'd won it in the first half, but they didn't score.
Well, they haven't played St Helens yet, have they?
Well, in the derby, they didn't kick on.
They haven't put a full 80 minute.
They haven't played Wigan. Well, have they played Wigan? I think they have. I think they're much like Warrington. They're a bigger test to come, and then you can gauge them. Yeah. You know, but I think Hull KR have the talent or the ability to be a top four team this season. But
so when they're on the telly this week and it's on the BBC, so I don't know who's going to be the touchline person who does the. So what did they say at half time? Bit like they do with Jenner on Sky. We need to find out what did Willie Peters say at half time, because it obviously doesn't work. That's the. All I will say, says Andy, is if Adam Pearson does send Tony Smith, please do it live on telly again. That was fantastic. But you can do it live on telly, because the people will complain if we say that. One other thing on Saturday that happened was the European Rugby League Challenge, World Club Challenge thing.
European Club Challenge
thing. That again. Yeah, because the RFL sent us a video, and if I play this, you'll be able to see it. There you go. Oh, that didn't work, did it? Well, no, we're back on. It was good, wasn't it, Phil? Catalans, they're quite good. The handy dragons, they're quite good.
This is impressive.
I know. This is the RFL who sent us this video, so I thought I'd use it.
Wow.
I know.
Weeks we can't get on other weeks.
If anyone wants to send us video, we can use. I mean, I'm not stolen.
So what you're saying, Rich, is they can't punish clubs who don't pay their players, but they can produce a nice video. Priorities.
I mean, there are two things to look at. One is Catalan were always going to be the favourites because they're in season and this was Wigan's first game. So the result and the performance maybe not a surprise, but as an event, hats off to Wigan. Yeah. What a fantastic... You know, Robin Park decked out... Gave it everything, bespoke floor, which I think, again, credit to the RFL for getting that laid in time. On the sportsman, again, we think...
Superb coverage, far better than the Challenge Cup the other week.
I think we know that the viewership was in the thousands. It's not going to be the high thousands.
What do you expect?
But again, that's great, isn't it? You know, on a Saturday evening at 6 o'clock, great spectacle. The one thing that we love about wheelchair, and you know, we've never hidden our love for it, is the fact that it doesn't actually matter what the score is, you can still get a hell of a lot out of watching it in terms of admiration for the people that play it and the skill levels that they show and all of the you know, the brutal hits in that game, the number of people that were helped up in their chairs, which is, and it was a fantastic event. Everybody stayed to see the cup presented. How often do you see, oh, my team didn't win, I'm off to get...
Oh, yeah, of course.
You know, getting in the car. It was a great occasion, came over really well. And let's hope this isn't now a regular date in the calendar. I know they tried it maybe 10 years ago, it never got official status. The last 2 years it has, with Halifax going to Perpignan last year and Wigan hosting it this year. It's another property, and it came over really, really well. Wigan started brilliantly for the first, I think, 12 minutes. They were in control, but when Catalan get that momentum going, they are unstoppable.
Season coming up soon.
Yeah. So,
go see games.
Keep watching Wheelchair Rugby League. It's the future.
Maybe one of the coaches will be on the show soon. Maybe.
He said he would.
Yeah, that's good then. Women's Challenge Cup this week. It was done. The group stage. Excitement. York beat Featherstone 80 points to 6. What a shock. Kelsey Gentle scored again.
Kelsey Jenner's at prop.
Can't stop her. Wigan 44, Cardiff 4, Warrington 6, St Helens 58, with Leah Burt back from injury. Salford 0, Barrow 46.
Getting a hat-trick.
Yeah. So maybe she'll be playing for England in the future. London 48, Bradford 0. Well done, the bookies who put London minus 8 there. Well done. Leeds 54, Huddersfield 10, and Hull County 0, Lee 46. The quarterfinals this week, to be confirmed at somewhere. Leeds versus Warrington, St Helens Huddersfield, Wigan Cardiff, and York versus Featherstone.
So that's York playing Featherstone, having just heavily beaten them in the group stage, and Wigan versus playing Cardiff. Who?
So I don't know how the draw. That's not
it was an open draw apparently, but you probably needed to structure it the other way around.
You could have done A versus B.
Winner of A versus runner up in B.
So that would be good. Although I am annoyed at clubs who play their reserves at their home grounds, playing their women at some park pitch or whatever. Nothing that. It's not very good optics for the Challenge Cup, which is why there's no coverage or anything. I've not seen, there's no write-up on the BBC website or anything. I wonder if it doesn't exist. League One this week, Hunslet 0, Oldham 62. Whoever was on last week and said they had a programme from Lucius Banks's first game, get in touch, please.
Yes, but get in touch, please, because the family of Lucius Banks would like a copy of it, or, you know, a photocopy. They don't want your programme.
North Wales 58, Newcastle 18, and Workington 32, Rochdale 22. This week, it's Keighley versus North Wales. They're back after their week off. Midlands versus Hunslet in Sheffield. Sheffield or Midlands? Just about.
South York.
Anywhere short of Barnsley, Midlands. Oldham, Cornwall. Oh, dear. And Rochdale versus Newcastle. In the Championship, Barrow beat York 15-14. What a game that was. Will Dagger's never going to forget that one. Dewsbury 6, Widnes 24. Doncaster 6, Wakefield 42. Luke Gebb becoming the oldest ever hat-trick scorer for Wakefield.
Wakefield top.
Featherstone 14, Bradford 24. Talk about them in a minute.
We talked about world records. That's a niche record, isn't it?
Well, it's just the club.
Hat-trick scorer.
For Wakefield. Is that for Wakefield?
Yeah, not just
right.
The club have all these stats. Sorry, cool. Halifax 18, Batley 10 on what looks like the worst pitch in the world. And I know the football fans are not happy there, but that's what council and not having money to spend on things. I don't know who's to blame for that. Toulouse 14, Swinton 20. Apparently you can watch 14 minutes of highlights on YouTube, says Paul. So go watch those. I'd steal them, but I don't know. You know.
Mr. Kellner will be watching it on a loop.
On a loop. Whitehaven 16, Sheffield 42. Featherstone, John, are they in trouble now? Because is there anything more to write about them?
There is, yeah.
Oh, there is more. There's more.
Well, I was told today Riley Jacks won his case against the club, so he should be getting his money, which is good. I believe there's a payment date set for today to certain players. Now, should find out tomorrow whether that's actually gone through or not. I think there's still a lot more to come. There's a lot of allegations about other people who are also money, which I'm trying to stand up, some which the club have denied, some which they haven't. But, I think it's a pretty sorry episode in the sport, but it does seem to keep happening every couple of years, as we've seen with Toronto and Salford and the Crusaders.
I'm going to assume that Featherstone are not the only club that this is going to be a story about at the end.
You mean other clubs doing the same?
Yeah.
I don't know that. I mean, I know... I think Whitehaven came out publicly in February that they'd played players. Like, I think, I mean, there's probably a few elements to it, but I think obviously the whole ecosystem of rugby league, as we all know, is not flush with money. And I think obviously the Championship in League One, the distributions have been reduced. They weren't much before. So, you know, there is more pressure perhaps there, to find money. But, there's a lot of elements to it, but I think the sad thing is that this has been going on for more than a year, and I think the RFL has been aware of that for a long time, and they don't seem to have taken any action, or, don't really seem to want to talk about it, or, it's just rumbled on, and a lot of the players and staff haven't had any support. And while I think the players' union are involved, although I can't seem to get them on the phone, not all the players.
Probably BBC is always on the podcast.
Not all the players are actually members of the union. And now there's supposed to be a new union being set up, isn't there? So that's also...
Well, was it that there's a new union being set up, or that players are going to be asked their opinions more? Or their opinions are going to be...
It's not clear.
Which one costs them money?
Because, you know, whilst a story was written about there is a new union, I didn't read it quite that way. I just... Like, we've had... Some Super League players have come forward and said, we want to be part of the decision-making process.
Because we want to be people in the
And the governing body have said, we want to make you part of the decision-making process. I don't know whether they said, go back and form a union.
Because there is a union. A union does exist.
Ryan Briley was on the Five Live.
He was, last
week. I was listening to it whilst jet-washing the patio. I was multitasking. Yeah, but I obviously wasn't listening quite intently enough to pick up whether he was talking about a union or not.
No, I think he was talking...
About respective roles, wasn't he? Yes. And George Williams sort of leading it. And
Alex Walmsley.
And having greater representation, but I wasn't 100% sure that would be taken over from the GMB. Or whether it's like a...
I would suspect not, because they've actually formed a union.
It's massive. If the RFL will say, we will set up a players subcommittee, and you're going to need to have people on that committee who are liaising with each other about when we're meeting and stuff does need to be like minuted. Then that might be the roles that they have, rather than setting up an alternative union, because that's been tried before with League 13 and people didn't.
It's behind you somewhere, isn't it? A picture of him looking Russian.
Yeah, there he is.
Is the Rugby League Writers and Broadcasters Association a union? Can we go on strike?
Left to us, Ms. Carter.
I don't believe it's a union, no.
It's just a talking shop.
Not even that at the moment.
I think there are attempts to revive it by people we may know, but we're not involved.
Dear. When you were on Radio Manchester, was it with Trevor Hunt?
No, it was with the lovely Jack Dearden.
I just thought that Trevor's at every game wearing his medals.
He was at the wheelchair.
He's like Snoop Dogg. He just walks around with his chains. He's bling.
But he wasn't commentating on that.
Yeah, I have to call him Mr. President. Mr. President. Otherwise, you get kicked out of any rugby league group.
Vice President.
All right. Well, I think he prefers President, but yeah.
In which we should also pay condolence to Doug Hoyle talking of President.
The speaker was named in the Pop Bitch email this week of celebrity gossip, because apparently his butler has a butler.
How rich do you have to be so your butler has a butler?
Does he have somebody who jet washes his patio for him?
Yeah,
I imagine probably has someone who jet washes his backside if you've got a butler's butler.
Lord Hoyle, very important in Warrington actually having the home that they have now.
Yes, yes. The Hoyle family have been massive supporters of Warrington, and you know, 98, his lordship did a sterling stint for 10 years as chairman, and obviously I think the tributes that will be paid to him, and already have been, will tell you the esteem in which he was held, not just in Warrington but in the game as well. So Keith Barnes,
I was going to say, Keith Barnes
I know he was born in Wales and played for Balmain.
Was he born in Wales? Mm. There you go. Yeah.
Did you not know that?
No, I remember him more as an administrator, because he ran Balmain in the 80s and 90s. Well, yeah, before they went... Well, they didn't go under in the 90s, but you know what I mean. Yeah, he was...
He left when the Super League War started. Yes. Because I think he could see direct...
Well, Balmain were, not to be harsh, a dying club, but he was... Well, one of their greatest ever players, and played for Australia. Fantastic. A winger. I think 80-odd died today. So, very fondly remembered, I think, by a lot of people in the sport.
Is there anything on your list that we haven't mentioned?
There is a few things, but, I mean, we don't need a run sheet, do we?
We never have one.
Yeah. I think the salary cap spend figures that Sky put out were interesting. I mean... For me, they looked pretty spot on. I mean, I've spoken to a few clubs and people in the game, and there's a little bit of, we don't spend this much, or so-and-so spends 150k more, but I think they're pretty close. It is interesting, the horse trading after that's been published. And a lot of fans complaining, they're not official and blah, blah, blah. I mean, should they be official?
Am I right in thinking in the NRL, the players' salaries are public knowledge?
They're not.
The average salary is.
Yeah, that you don't. There's not a list of X and this, but they're reported, because obviously there's a lot more media, there's a lot more journalists. And you'll find out that so and so is a $1 million player, or you know, he signed a 10-year deal worth $10 million or.
I still think we need to publish who our marquee players are.
I think that's, you don't necessarily have to say what their salary is, no. But this club has three marquees, this club has one marquee.
And who they are, because yeah. I think part of being a marquee player is we need to sell them to the wider public. They're the Now, we keep saying, oh, who are the great individuals coming through? Well, you know, if Jack Welsby is a marquee player...
Surely he is a marquee player. Well, surely. But we don't know that for a fact.
And that's one of the requirements now, isn't it, for a marquee player?
Not publicly, Bevan French presumably is a marquee player.
Yeah, yeah.
No, not to be announced publicly, that they engage more in terms of their social media.
Well, tell us who they are first. How do we know if they're engaging more? Yeah. If we don't know
but that seems to be just we'll invite them to the darts and then they'll be on TV for 3 seconds. There's no, I mean, that's great, don't get me wrong, not that I ever watch darts, but there's nothing more than that.
If Lewis Dodd is re-signing with Saints, that will be as a marquee player.
I believe he is.
I think everybody is saying that he is, but...
I might have written that first, Phil, though,
But as a marquee player, but if he is, tell us.
Well, but that's the thing, we don't know, because you would presume Johnny Lomax is a marquee player. They've got a number of players at that club who would qualify. You know, Tommy Makinson's leaving, he may have been on a marquee contract, James Roby, you would have thought, was, but he's no longer...
Louis wasn't.
Colin Moore.
He was not a marquee player,
but he was for the magazine.
He's star man. Yeah.
But no, I think the interesting bit of that is we don't have to go through exactly what was 1-12. But I think Wigan and Catlands were top. It's not surprising. And at the bottom was London. But Cass,
part of the reason London Wigan are at the top is because you get dispensation for junior development, which is what we were talking about earlier.
There's two elements. There's that, and then there's the marquee. Yep. And if you've got a billionaire owner and you want to give Bevan French £600,000 a season, you can do that. Obviously, but Castleford.
But I also think that again, under IMG grading, that's something we need to know. Who are those players?
Mm.
What are we getting them to do to elevate the profile of the sport? You have got a billionaire owner and another club hasn't, all the more reason to try and get more billionaire owners involved in the sport and have a salary cap floor.
Andy says, should poorer clubs be allowed to rent their marquee licence for a richer club?
No.
Well, you know what? What teams need to do is sign, as Leeds did, a partnership, a male and a female player, and then you can offset some of your wage onto the female player. Because there's no salary cap in the women's
league. Are you
Ronnie and Rita Reiner?
Are you alluding to some sort of salary cap dodge back in the day?
No, because she's legitimately playing.
All right, okay.
So she's not playing in the stadium, allegedly, so you can do that.
Well, I think
the clubs to bear in mind.
The interesting thing out of that was probably the value that Salford have been getting from their... They've been overachieving while, I mean, I think Warrington and Leeds were up there. And I think that list wouldn't have changed much the last few years, you know. And I think Warrington haven't been getting value for their spend for a while, and Leeds probably haven't, arguably, either. And Huddersfield was the other one who were, obviously, they have a very rich owner. They are getting some good academy products the last few years, which is good to see.
And it doesn't guarantee success.
No, no, it doesn't. That's the other... St Helens are getting great value.
If you're
going to
promote the sport, let us know who the market.
James has got a new job. What's the?
Yes, this is the board. This is
not the inclusivity board, James. All the people.
Oh no, he's got two new jobs.
Well, I know, but we're not supposed to talk about the other one.
Well,
because you've got to wait until Friday.
It's up to him.
Rich, that's not very inclusive.
But all the people on Facebook say, "What are you inclusivity board for?" Because that's what they talk like on Facebook.
Well, we've had an inclusion board for a number of years.
Inclusion, sorry, not inclusion.
Rimla Raptor stepped down from chairing that role a few months ago, and they've been waiting to appoint somebody. So they've appointed Jamie Jones Buchanan to chair that board.
Oh, God, they're going to be long meetings, aren't they? Because he knows lots of words for his JJB.
And there's some new members onto the inclusion board, me being one of them, along with a number of others, and some that are retained from the previous board. So... It's a voluntary role. It's not paid. get that in there before people say anything about Rugby League's wasting money on this and that, which I've seen. It's the inclusion board is there for people who are not employees of the RFL, but they can check and challenge and support the work that's been done around inclusion and the Tackle It campaign, really. So we've yet to have our first meeting, but... having sort of worked for the RFL previously and seen it from the other side of the fence, I have an interest in inclusion. It'll be interesting to be part of that board and hopefully help the sport you know, continue this, some of the good work that it's already doing and improve. And that's the purpose of it, really. But my other hat now is I've been asked by Phil Bentham to review Super League games on a weekly basis. So I should be... Well, last weekend I reviewed the Castleford-Salford game, and I'll be reviewing one of the quarterfinals this weekend, so just one game a weekend, and assisting the referees in the department with the development of the referee.
Which is a major step forward. Not just that you, but...
Well, you know, a new coach has come into the department, and inevitably you bring in...
But it's other, we talk about culture, don't we? And the culture of the referees group, the match officials group, is changing.
Yes.
Much needed change, should we say.
There's been some changes, personnel behind the scenes as well.
But you're not the only one coming back, are you? Right?
No, so he's bringing in... Ian Smith has come in as a reviewer, and Matt Thomason, who used to refereed a number of games in Super League himself. So he's coming in to review. So it's only on a consultancy basis to review individual games. So, you know, we're not in there in full-time roles.
So you'll have to tell us which games you've done, and we won't ask you about it.
I did the Castleford-Salford game, which I said, and this weekend I've got one of the quarterfinals. But it will be tricky for me to sit on the podcast and start going through decisions. I can't go and talk about individual decisions, really. But I can give you a feeling for why a referee may have made a decision or the reasoning behind a decision. So I think there may be still is a benefit to me being here, if people see it that way.
I think it's called The Enemy Within, isn't it?
Something
but,
like that.
But I think,
didn't we have a tweet about the podcast has improved immeasurably because James?
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, you've got to say.
Yeah, but
and I'm not buying biscuits for anyone else.
Thanks, Phil. I think there were obviously a lot of referees who spoke out about the culture, and you were one of them in the department. So it seems like this is positive that things have changed or are changing.
I'd like to think so. When I was, refereeing, it would have been, it was great if you could have somebody of contemporary experience. Mm. So, Ian refereed probably the best part of 300 Super League games, I would think. High 200s, I did 333. So, I'd like to think I can give something back to the referees. And,
well, you've written a piece for magazine on Friday. I have to say that about every 20 minutes.
Yes.
On Liam Rush, who's somebody you've seen develop from the age of 12 through the Batley and Dewsbury Referee Society. And again, if you can be there in your capacity to mentor them, for want of a better but appropriate word, that's got to be an advantage.
Yeah, I reviewed Chris Kennell from the weekend, and I said to Chris in review that the way I reviewed the game was how I would have wanted it to be reviewed when I was refereeing, and the manner in which I was spoken to and the constructive way in which the game was reviewed, hopefully... he found it that way, and I think he did. But so that's, for me, is about culture, isn't it? And fostering the right environment. And I'm not in there on a full time basis, so I'm not there day to day. So I don't see how it plays out. But hopefully it's a positive for the referees and the department. And ultimately people on games will maybe see the benefits of that. But ultimately we're dealing with people that are operating at the highest level. Whether you think they're any good or not, I happen to think they are. But we're talking about small percentage improvements and stuff, and that's what it's about, really.
What we need to find out is when you've had your first inclusion board meeting, is what the biscuits are like at the end.
Well, the first meeting is going to be online, so I think it's a bring your own biscuits.
BYOB, yeah. Oh no. I think that's it. Is that everything?
Well, he set an agenda. We didn't read it.
I think we spoke about most of the things.
Well, I mean, the Fenton Rodgers.
You know that we don't plan anything.
No. I think the Fenton, not that I've covered it, but obviously being aware of the Fenton Rodgers case is an interesting one.
I think this is, again, goes back to why don't we have some kind of integrity unit?
Well, we don't because we don't have any money. Well, I think that's, yeah.
Because it's been spent on.
But I think it's interesting that obviously he was arrested. I think it was on Good Friday or around Easter for drink driving and allegedly assaulting an emergency worker. He's got a court date in May. He was suspended by the club, and then now they've done an investigation, apparently, and now he's not suspended and he's gone alone to Bradford. But he's still got a court case coming up in May, which...
The burden of proof for a club investigation is lower than an actual criminal investigation.
It's just, there doesn't seem to be a lot of consistency with these things. obviously the Deon, I'm not sure how you pronounce his last name, but Deon A, he was convicted and then played and then got banned by the RFL. But why was he allowed to play 4 days later? I mean, it really boggles my mind how these things work.
Certain player at least.
It just,
their wonderful statement they put out about it.
Yes. Well, that's another. I mean, there's so many examples, Rich, and you could go through every year. But it just.
Isn't it a minefield, though? If you're in charge of something, you're in some proven.
Yeah,
guilty,
this is where I'm not a fan of the no fault standout thing in Australia, because
it's been controversial. Yeah.
Does that, to the outside world who've got no interest in rugby league or knowledge of it, does that suggest that they are guilty? Because I'm thinking, well, if the club's suspending them, it's difficult. It is a difficult one. I don't know how you deal with things, but you need to do something or be seen to do something.
Yeah, I think when you've been convicted and then you're allowed to play and then banned.
Oh, that's different.
Yeah, I think. Particularly for beating up a woman.
Play devil's advocate, they've suspended him, they've investigated it, whatever that meant, and they've reached a conclusion.
Mm.
And they've decided, presumably, that they don't want him to be playing for their club.
Mm.
Certainly for the time.
But they want him to be fit.
And presumably, if they're sending it out to another club, they're not paying his wages, are they? I don't know how that works, but they don't want him as part of that environment for the time being. So to me, it's, from the outside looking, it looks like they've at least dealt with it from their point of view. Mm. Have they dealt with it in the right way? I don't know. I mean,
what does it say about the club that's taking him in, though?
But then he's innocent, isn't he?
Yes.
So he's innocent until proven guilty.
We're talking about a culture.
But if he is proven guilty and he has attacked a police officer and been drink driving, I mean, what is... And I'm not saying I know the answer, but what is the appropriate punishment? It's... Yeah, I mean... Well, it ties back to the Joe Westman thing last year. Mm.
Because that's obviously not...
That was... He wasn't arrested. Well... Depends, how Mormon you are, but it wasn't illegal what he did. But it went viral, went around the world. I mean, the fact that he was on a 14-hour or 13-hour drinking bender 1 week from the season probably says a lot about your club culture. But they made him captain this year. He didn't get suspended. He didn't miss a game. I mean, is that a good look for the sport? I think the common theme with all these, and I've seen it, the Wanga Blake one is different, but... It's related in some ways, but the common theme is that clubs don't want to punish their players because they need them on the field. So there needs to be a governing body will obviously say, actually, you kind of need to stand this guy down, or because.
But do you need an integrity unit? Because they've got the RFL will regularly investigate situations. They're generally like on match day situations, aren't they? But they investigate.
They won't. I've used the Wanga Blake example. It's a club matter. What I say, it's a club matter,
and you get that to some extent because they're employed by somebody else. But then, if you're there to hold the integrity of the competition,
yes,
at what point do you step in? Hmm. It's difficult though. Then, if you do step in on one, what do you step in on that one? And you get into that
it's not black and white.
The thing with the Wanga Blake one is it has been investigated by
the police,
and there is no. Charge so
there isn't no further action.
So an integrity unit,
gets to play
again,
for the reserves.
Probably leaving it to the club probably would be the right course of action.
But in my experience, Phil, the clubs don't generally act in the
right
way.
No, I'm saying from the governing body's point of view, that's probably not one that.
But I use the DNA example. Yep. He was convicted. I think the RFL suggested to Whitehaven maybe he shouldn't play.
Yeah.
He then played.
Yeah.
They then banned him for 8 weeks. Now that is
atrocious. That was a ludicrous decision by the club, though.
Mm.
Yeah.
If you even
but that's my point, James.
Even
you
your
can't
own
lead,
fans, though. But you even your own fans of waiting. How would you justify?
But the same goes in with the Featherstone situation. They signed an NRL halfback 2 weeks before the season started. They're owing numerous people money from 18 months ago, which the RFL's. But that contract was registered. How is that fair? How is that, sane? That's my point. But it is hard when you try and be judge, police, etc. And what's the difference between domestic violence and drink driving? Or I agree, it is very hard, and there isn't easy answers. And I think the NRL with the Jack DeBellin case, which is not particularly nice, but you could say they went down the wrong path. They were standing him down for so long when he was ultimately found innocent. But I think it's something what Super League or the RFL seems to be just letting it go over here. The Ben Barber example was another one. and you say, oh, he was so good for St Helens, and but yeah, but he's a known beater of his partner, you know. Should he be playing?
And this week, the NRL, there's a player not having a special stitching on his shirt because he played 300 games, but he's...
Yeah, Michael Jennings, yeah, I mean, that's... Yeah, it's a very difficult situation, yeah.
It seems a bizarre thing
to... You read the comments that his ex-wife made in court, and it's pretty tough reading, but...
It's a bizarre punishment, is it?
I think, but that... The thing is that people don't seem to... Or some people don't seem to read... This is tied down to how the game makes money. If you're a sponsor, do you want your brand associated with people who do these things? Some companies don't, and that does... That's why in the NRL they have been so hard, because sponsors have said, well, we're not going to... We'll take that million from the club because you've got a whatever in your, and you're not punishing them. So that it has an impact. It's all interrelated. That's
not disrespect to Whitehaven or the league in general, but if that same situation happened with a Premier League football player, I mean, could you imagine the
I had the debate with my partner about this, and I used the Mason Greenwood. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you're aware of it, the case with the Manchester United player, and obviously the audio of what happened went up. The girl... He didn't get cleared. She just refused in the end to give her evidence because obviously very traumatic. But he was sacked fairly quickly by Manchester United.
Well, he's still employment, but they've sent him out on loan
But I think Manchester United realised the impact stupid.
But I think they hung Gennaro over that themselves.
But that's because the result of the weekend is much more important.
But they probably had another kid coming through who was...
They've probably got £5 in the back pocket to sign someone else, but yeah,
you've got to see the bigger picture though. Yeah. It comes back to culture, doesn't it?
Yes. Also in rugby league in England, because these things aren't covered, you can kind of get away with perhaps not taking action.
I think that's everything, isn't it?
Have you got through your list?
Well, the NRL's been really good lately. Yeah,
that's taken as a given, isn't it?
Too much rugby league. Dolphins.
Well, there is too much. Too much rugby league is a good point, because my partner on Saturday night was kind of like, I can't watch the St Helens because I think it was the fifth or sixth game. It was like, couldn't. Yeah. So, is there any other relationships that are failing?
Fortunately, mine did. But,
yeah. Is there any other relationships that are failing because of the amount of rugby league being put in?
Don't
households?
Watch the NRL then.
It's more the Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, Sunday afternoons.
You've only got two games this weekend.
Yeah,
so.
Just think when the championship comes around. Yeah, I mean, who's going to win in the Challenge Cup then this week? James can't answer. So
I think two.
I'm not going to, because people will say.
I'd say two or three of the games you'd think you could pick a winner relatively easy. I think the Warrington St Helens game. That should be an amazing game. That should be a cracker.
Yeah.
I think on current form, Hull KR, Catalans.
Yeah.
And Wigan. I mean, if Castleford beat Wigan, that could be the greatest upset since Sheffield Eagles. But yeah, I can't see that one.
There's two stand-up ties, isn't there, in the BBC, isn't it?
Mm.
Leeds, Saints, Wigan, York. Nailed on. Right, that is it. Thank you very much for watching. Thanks for all your comments. Sorry to get to all of them, and I know you've all enjoyed it because you've all been chatting away in the chat. And Paul, thank you. I'll tell Phil. Join us next week. I don't know when. Sports Social Podcast Network.